Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Dennis Wolf.
Hey, good afternoon, good evening. It's 7 p.m. on the Eastern Seaboard here. Was treated to a beautiful rainbow from the, we didn't get the rain, but we just got the rainbow. And that's something that follows me around is rainbows, unicorns, well, not real ones, but my horses were, and four-leaf clover. So there's a lot of great things going on. Today I wanted to talk about something a little bit serious, medical conditions that dogs can have. And I know we go through this periodically. And of course, I'm not a veterinarian. But that being said, most veterinarians don't have the volume of different animals that I've been privy to and have owned through the years. And I think it's just really an important thing to let people know that certain conditions are emergencies. I have a very good friend who called me last night instead of calling the vet and said, "Hey, my dog is having a terrible seizure. I don't know what I should do." And I said, "Well, stabilize the dog, make sure it's not getting hurt, and then get to the emergency vet immediately." "Well, you think I need to?" I was like, "Your dog could die." He says, "Well, his gums are turning white, not even gray, but white." And I said, "Your dog is hypoxic. The dog does not have enough oxygen. There are so many things that can happen. Get him to the emergency room." Now, that brings up a question. Can you afford to go to the emergency room? Can you afford a battery of thousands and thousands of dollars of tests? My answer for me is, of course I can, because I have really good pet insurance. So I can go to any vet. I had an emergency today with one of my rescues, and I brought her to the vet, and they said, "Well, you know, this is going to be pricey. You've got these tests and that test and x-rays and ultrasounds and this and that and the other thing." And I said, "I have insurance." She goes, "Okay, we're going to get it all done." Now, it doesn't mean that the vet is going to just go crazy, but if you love your animal that much, like I do, and you can't imagine living without your animal, why would you not have health insurance? Now, I'm not necessarily going to get into brands, but check them out. There's a reason that the one that's the most expensive, which I have, is the most expensive. It's because it covers the most stuff and there's no cap. Now, one of Wyatt's sons last year passed away. The bill was, I believe, almost $10,000. And she had insurance, which was great. But she had one that's three letters long, starts with V and ends with I. And it was like a $3,500 maximum. What is $3,500? I mean, if your dog, God forbid, gets something, it's going to be more than $3,500. That's like you getting hospitalization and saying, "I'm going to get $5,000 of health insurance." What? You walk into an ER and you're already at $10,000. So if you're going to get insurance, then get the best insurance you can possibly afford. You're better off going with a more expensive plan that has no limits than just get a higher deductible than to go with one of the cheaper companies. And there are quite a few of them now. So the one that I use is Trupanion. You don't have to use them. I don't get anything if you use them. But I literally have gone into the emergency room. And, of course, they all know me because I have a lot of dogs. And we take really good care of our dogs. I've literally gone in. And they've said it's a $13,000 estimate. You need to leave 80% of the higher estimate. So if you got $13,000, you're talking about roughly $11,000, you know, when all is said and done. You got $11,000? You got $11,000 on a credit card? You're going to go get CareCredit, which is also, by the way, a very good program. Are you going to go do that? What, max out your credit card? And how long is it going to take you to pay that back? When you could have had health insurance, even if you have, like, let's say $1,000 deductible, all you'd have to do is give the $1,000 to the vet plus 10% of the rest of the estimate. So instead of paying $13,000 and having to leave, you know, $11,000, let's say, you'd probably leave about $1,300. Okay, that is where you can get your pet the best care. You shouldn't look at health insurance as an option.
You should look at it, if you love your dog, as a necessity. You know, in the olden days, right, before we had, you know, when we had the horse and wagon, right, when we didn't have MRIs and CTs and radiation treatment and chemo and SRT and SRS, and we didn't have, you know, some of the drugs and the things that are so expensive, yeah, it didn't matter if you, you know, what you walked into the vet. Maybe you walked out with $400, and including medication, maybe $1,000. But nowadays, there's so many options for you that you will not be able to get your dog if you don't have pet health insurance. I mean, I have, you don't want to know how many dogs I have, but my premiums are well over $1,000 a month for my dogs. But you got to get a lump removed. Somebody's got cancer. Somebody's got to get on chemo. My one dog who, you know, was the subject of a court case that I had to sue this scumbag to get my dog back after all the time. But that dog has had over $20,000 to put her back together after I got her back. She had cancer. She had an ear tumor. She had all kinds of stuff. Instead of paying $20,000, and it's way more than that now because she had radiation treatment that was $13,700. I think I paid less than $2,000 for that. So what I want to talk about is budgeting for your pet to get good health insurance. Now, a lot of you listening, and I know there are a lot of people who first-time dog owners, you don't even know pet health insurance exists. And I don't care which brand you get, except that check it out. Don't go with the cheapest. I've had more people call me and say, well, I had, you know, health insurance, and, you know, they covered $68 of the first $1,000. Well, if you can't afford at least a couple thousand dollars in case of emergency, you probably shouldn't own a pet, because then where do you go? You say, I can't afford it. And you know what the vet clinic says? I'm sorry, we can euthanize your dog. So you go home with, you know, no dog. You get a box, you know, a couple of weeks later, little box, if you can even afford that, because it's a few hundred dollars for that. And you go tell your 5-year-old or your 8-year-old kid, I'm sorry, the doggie is running around on a farm, and you feel guilty for the rest of your life. The kids know you lied. Kids hate you when you grow up. And I'm certified in pet loss and bereavement counseling. If I could tell you the number of adults who as children were lied to by their parents, and the kids knew more, they knew better, they never trust their parents because they say, how could you lie to me about something as important as my pet? So how do we avoid that? Great things to do. Pet health insurance, if you go and you get a puppy, especially if you have a lab or a golden or one of these poodle mix things, like with the, all the different, you know, F82B3Q10, and you have these dogs that have very uncertain and very questionable genetics, you've got to be out of your mind if you don't have really good health insurance for them. Because they're going to have issues, they're going to have weird cancers, juvenile cataracts, things like that, that you couldn't afford to get the surgery. I mean, people are paying $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 for mixed breed designer whatever they want to get that looks cute, and God knows that the genetics aren't there, and you know, there's a lot of issues. Even in a really well-bred dog, a German Shepherd, you take a great German Shepherd, they got a lot of issues. Certain breeds have a lot of issues. So if you get health insurance, this is what I would say, get the higher deductible. So let's say if you have a dog who's, you know, let's say like a lab puppy, you get $100 deductible because you're going to be in with more foreign bodies, and, you know, you might have a TPLO. You might have, you know, you're going to have a lot of ingestion of foreign bodies, a lab or a golden puppy. So you can have bad hips. You can have thyroid issues. You can have cancers. So you might be better off getting a lower deductible, $250, $500, whatever. But remember, if you get a low deductible on your insurance, like $100, yes, it's going to cover more, but it's going to cost you like $40 a month more to get that $100. So you might be better off with like a $350, $500, $750, even $1,000. And then get either an extra credit card or get yourself care credit. It's a really good deal. I used it on a dog that we had It's, I believe, interest-free. You do have to have good credit for it. I think you can use it on your own medical bills as well, but I got it for the dogs. So I have like a $10,000 or $20,000 line so that if I have a problem with a dog and I do need to leave money for whatever reason, I can leave it on the care credit. And then the balance is paid for by insurance. Now, what my suggestion is let's say if you get a little higher deductible, let's say you get a $500 deductible on this. So now you have a $500 deductible, whack away. Every month your dog doesn't go to the vet, put away $100. In a year, you're going to have $1,200 in that account. So if you do that, now you have that deductible, that $500 or $1,000 deductible just sitting there. And then you don't have to worry. Treat it like a Christmas club that it's for your dog and you haven't bought him anything yet. So then you've got security for your dog. The other thing I like particularly about Trupanion, and again, this is just who I went with. I did a massive amount of research. I recommend it to all our service dog recipients, to you guys, if you have a service dog, if you have just a pet, I highly, highly recommend it. But, you know, go, there's Pet Partners, I think it's called, or Pet Plan, it's called, is a pretty good one. But they're all, you know, nationwide, I've heard good and bad. You've really got to just go out and do what you want to do and figure that out. But don't do nothing. At least get one of those, or if you're going to get it, like you might be able to get for $40 or $50 a month, you can get maybe for a puppy, maybe $500 or, you know, $1,000 deductible. That'll cover you for anything. And what I like about them, about Trupanion, is you don't have to re-satisfy the deductible. So, you know, if you like go some of the other companies, every year it's another deductible, kind of like with, you know, people's medical bills. But if you have, like, let's say you have $1,000 stashed away now, and I know that's a lot of money for a lot of people, and it's a lot of money for me too, but I have that, and I have the care credit so that I know I always have that extra amount of money for whatever could possibly happen. But what's great is you can get your pet, not the basics, but you can get your pet an MRI. Costs $3,000, it's $300 for you. I mean, it's still a lot of money, but to get an MRI, I mean, you pay more than that for a human one. And this way, you know, you can say, oh my God, my dog has a nasopharyngeal tumor, which is what I think my friend's dog has, by the way. And they can see it and they know what it is and then they can treat it. If you can't do that or you don't want to, at least get something or put a little money away. You know, yes, it's hard with COVID and everything, but you know what? The stimulus checks, I put them in my doggy slush fund. That's why I've got money for my dogs, because it doesn't matter how much you make. Some people make a lot of money and their expenses are massive. Some people don't make a lot, but they don't have a lot of expenses. So we're all pretty much in the same boat, but our dogs should never suffer. Our dogs should never be in a position where they can't get something, whatever it is, because we can't afford it. We would feel the same way about our children. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that and just kind of get everybody in the right frame of mind so that everybody's thinking like, oh, okay, that makes sense. If I have that for my dog, then I'm able to provide better care. And really, that's what it's all about. It's not about how much money you make. It's not about what kind of dog you have. It's about making sure that your pet, dog or cat, is able to get the best care. And if you have one of these little dogs and like, I know some of the poodle mixes and stuff have actually higher rates because they have such high genetic issues. Goldens are going to be more. But if you just get, like, honestly, go get a rescue dog that's just like a real mutt. They're going to be great dogs most likely. And the rates are lower because genetically non-modified dogs, just dogs who just bunch of breeds and they just breed it into, you know, kind of pups breed kind of all over. Unless they get something, and we've talked about this, if mama was under stress or they were malnourished, well, that's another thing. But most rescue dogs, and if you see them, they don't seem to have a lot of allergies or whatever. They're super healthy, and the rates are probably the same for if you start to insure a dog at 4 or 5 years of age, but it's a rescue versus getting like a puppy golden or a puppy doodle, whatever you buy, or a brachiocephalic, like, you know, the dogs with the snub nose, the short noses, because a lot of them have a lot of issues. Certain breeds and combinations of breeds have a lot of chronic eye issues. So there's a different rate based on what breed the dog is. And get the insurance, you know, get it sooner than later, because you know when everybody decides they needed to get health insurance for their dogs? When they're in the emergency room, the waiting room of the vet's office, or outside in the car going, oh my God, we can't afford to do this. We're going to have to go home without a dog. And it's just, it's the worst feeling in the world. Listen, it's hard enough being able to get all the tests, being able to do all that for your dog, and then failing. But to feel like you weren't even able to give your dog that really great, that best care, it's the worst feeling in the world. So, you know, if you get this pet insurance, you'll see you'll be able to give your dog much better quality and quantity of medical care. And that's really what it's all about. So we're going to segue from that into seizures, continue to talk about seizures. Now, dogs can have seizures from all different kinds of things. Don't think like, oh my God, my dog's having this weird thing. But dogs can get absent seizures and focal seizures and a lot of the same seizures and epilepsy as humans can. I bet a lot of people didn't know that. Dogs can have autism. It's the same cause. It's just a matter of the dog having different symptoms. So if a dog is having a seizure, now, if it's the first time the dog's had it, it could be that the dog got into poison. He got into chemicals. He had some kind of terrible allergy. It could be that there was something that happened to him that caused that in that moment. But if your dog has had several of them, and if there's any bleeding associated with it, like if you have blood coming from the nose or the ears or the eyes or the mouth, it could be not only that the dog could have bitten its own tongue, but it could also be that, especially if it's coming from the nose or the jawline area, you can have a nasopharyngeal tumor. You can have an actual tumor up in the behind the nasal passages, like kind of your sinuses, if you would, the top of your soft palate. There can be a tumor in there. And when it puts pressure on, or certain conditions can make it bleed more. And if your dog has been having blood or discharges coming from its nose and mouth, and I'm not talking it's like spitting up little bits where it's a blood tinge or something like a little gastritis or all, but we're talking about actual blood, it could be a tumor or it could be some kind of a lesion there. And it could be something that you can fix, but maybe you can't afford to do that. And if you had had health insurance, you would have been able to. So seizures are definitely something. And they can also happen from dogs not only getting into chemicals or pesticides or things like that, but it sometimes can be brought on by extreme stress, which can be from a very hot day. So if your dog is laying in the sun, or that's why if you have a dog in a hot car, God forbid, and please, please, please don't do that. But if you do have something like that happens to your dog, it can be that extreme stress and anxiety, that heat stress can cause like a heat stroke and can cause seizures as well. So very, very important. Another thing I'm seeing a lot of right now is dogs inhaling mold spores. I'm seeing dogs with fungal infections up in their nasal passages. I'm seeing also a lot of dogs who are having allergies to things that they never had allergies to. So there are things that you can do. There's a great, you know, check with your veterinarian, but there's a really great thing called Cytopoint. Now, certain breeds cannot have Apoquil. So if you have a herding breed or certain of those, some of the Belgian Shepherds, Apoquil, you got to be very careful with. Make sure your veterinarian knows your breed, and you can go online to a group for whatever breed or combination of breeds you have and just say, hey, has anybody had a problem with this such and such a drug. It doesn't mean that your dog will or won't. It just means that there's more of a propensity or more of a tendency for a breed or combination of breeds to be reactive to something that's, you know, like a medication or a vaccination even. So the cyto point, which is great if you're doing a lot of traveling, if you have a place, let's say you're driving down to Florida for the winter, you come back up to New Jersey, or you're going across country, it's very likely that your dog can get a contact dermatitis from something. It lays on something it's not familiar with. That's why we are all told to have a little bit of local honey, because it builds your responses and your antibodies for, you know, for that particular allergen. I mean, honey's not bad for a dog. You can give your dog a little bit of honey. I wouldn't go overboard, because remember, cancer eats sugar. So you don't want to give us or the dog particularly a lot of sugar, but you can, you know, do a little bit of honey. Again, check with your veterinarian. Also, if you're going to, let's say you're going to be in Arizona or you're going to be in New Mexico and you're from Jersey or you're from New York or Pennsylvania, guess what? There are diseases you need to get vaccinated for, such as, let's say, Valley fever. Horses with a particular thing, Potomac fever. Potomac fever, if you have an imported warm blood horse from Europe, a lot of them will go moon blind if you, I mean, it's terrible. It's like a blindness, not full blindness, but a moon blindness, they call it, that comes from the horses are not able, if they're a European, certain European countries, for some reason they have a reaction to Potomac fever vaccine. So you don't give it to them. So it's really important for you not only to look at your dog or your pet and say, okay, I need these vaccinations, but also look at where you're going to be going. So like Wyatt and Savannah and Wispa and all my service dogs who travel with me all over and are exposed to a lot of things, all of them got vaccinations for wherever we were going so that they already had the immunity built up. So same thing, if you're in, you know, let's say you flea and tick because you're in an area that doesn't have fleas and ticks, and now you're going to be traveling or camping or, you know, wherever you're going to be, you might need to get a flea and tick repellent. And that's great because you can use topical. I'm not a big fan of trifexis. Talk to your vet. But a lot of the like ivermectin and different things like that, which are wormers, you can use after the fact. But, you know, make sure that you, you know, you keep your dog safe and you get the vaccines that are going to be appropriate for that location, not only where you live, but where you're going. So let's go through a couple of other things that happen in the hot time, and it's supposed to be a little cooler, but then it gets hot next week again, that heat stroke. Heat is a really, really bad thing for dogs and for cats, but especially for dogs. Why is it bad? Well, for one thing, it's bad because the heat, if they can't get out of the heat, it doesn't get better, and you literally have to put them on ice. So it's very tenuous. So if, especially if you have an older dog and you go, oh, but he loves to lay on the concrete by the swimming pool. Guess what? He'll love to lay inside. Put the fireplace, if you have a gas fireplace, or you know, put something in the fireplace so you can pretend to have a fire going and put a light in there or something. But don't let this dog be outside, especially an older dog. Because an older dog does not have the ability to thermoregulate. It's almost like a puppy, right? When you get overheated, a young dog will pant. An older dog will pant too, but they're not as efficient. Their hearts aren't typically as strong. Their lungs aren't as functional. So everything is going to be exacerbated and made worse because of this dog being in those extreme conditions. So if your dog is outside, make sure you're outside with him. If he's allowed outside in the heat during the day and you're at work, make sure you have a good shady area for him, or shade the whole area so he has to be in shade. Make sure he's got a lot of fresh, clean water. I say fresh and clean because we don't want the water sitting. You know, if water sits, you put a bowl of water out 24 hours later with all the crap that gets into it, there's algae starting to grow, there's bacteria, there's fungal spores, there's mold, there are protozoal things. A bird could poop in it. That's how they get Giardia. There's so many different things that can happen. So make sure, and if you want to even cover the water, you know, put a little enclosure, like almost like a little doghouse kind of a thing, that so it's not, the water is covered from things falling from above and getting into it. Make sure it's fresh, make sure it's clean, and make sure it's plentiful. Don't leave a bowl of food outside because you're going to have every animal in the world coming out to try to grab your food. Again, be smart about this. Don't do the things that most people do, and then they call up and say, oh, my dog died. Well, what happened? Well, I didn't know, but I did this and that and the other thing, and that was a bad idea. Find out ahead of time. In these days, there's just no excuse for any dog to die of anything preventable or to be sick from anything preventable. The cheapest thing you can ever do is preventive care for your dog. And if you can't afford it, there are clinics. And there are a lot of places that if you go in and you say, listen, I just can't afford it. I'm a single mother with four kids, and I can't afford the care for the dog. They might even have a fund. A lot of these places will have somebody. I know I've done that. I've donated thousands of dollars through the years to families who couldn't afford it. And I would just, you know, pay the bill for them, but not let them know that I paid the bill for them. So there are good people out there. You never know. And some of these veterinary places do have like a fund, which is for people who are trying really hard and they have kind of one of those tough things that happens and you're paying for the things, but you don't have a lot of money, and they'll try to help you. Most vet clinics are pretty helpful like that. So already we're at the halfway mark of our show. So obviously I'm going to have to take a break. We're going to have to come back in a couple of minutes. Instead of For the Love of Dog, we're going to be talking about shelter dog to service dog, with all the things that service dogs need that are a little special and different circumstances and conditions that we're going to talk about relating to the summer and to the summer heat with your service dog. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. So we are going to talk about summer and how it relates to your service dog. Now, we already talked about insurance. By the way, if you do have a service dog, legitimate service dog, make sure you tell the insurance company because they will probably give you a slight discount on that. And if you have multiple pets, they might do that too. But one of the other things is people don't know when you have an actual service dog, not an emotional support dog, not a therapy dog, that you can actually also not pay for the licensing fee. There is a fee for something else that you do have to pay that's probably between $3 and $10. But the licensing fee, if it's $35, you only have to pay that small amount. And please don't fake it, because I'm actually working with a group of other individuals who was kind of tired of people faking the service dogs, but we're also tired of all of this kind of going the wrong way and all the time having people who are taking advantage of the system, because it's really pretty low-life thing to do. But people do it, right? That's what they do. If you have a service dog, or if you have a dog that you are connected to, if it's an emotional support dog, which to me, every dog is an emotional support dog. That's why we get them. You know, we've got to really do the right thing for them. We've got to give them everything we possibly can. So one of the things that you want to make sure you're doing when you're taking your service dog out, don't give them a big, heavy meal in the morning. if you're going to be out working. A lot of times people feed the dog. They'll give him, let's say it's a larger dog, and he's getting two and a half cups of food. And now that his body is going to get hot, right? Your body gets hot after you eat because your body turns on. Now, parts of your body will get cooler, but your gut gets warmer because it's obviously working harder. So if you're going to be out, and let's say it's one of those great July or August days where, you know, it's going to be 90, 95, 100 degrees. I mean, those of you in Arizona and some parts of Texas and New Mexico are going, 100 degrees, that's a cool day. That's what our nights are if we're lucky. But we do have to think about it. You don't want that food sitting in the dog's belly because they can bloat. They can get very gassy. They can get gastric torsion, which is a bloat, which is the stomach, entire stomach kind of flips over on its side and strangulates itself, and that can lead to death. It is a very, very, very emergent situation. So if you know you're going to be taking your dog out and you're going to be working that day, give them a half a meal. Give them a smaller meal. Again, I'm not a veterinarian, but I've been doing this for like since I was 8 years old in 4-H, right? So a lot of years. But if you can think about that, you don't want to eat a big meal in the morning, but you know that you're going to be going out and going to be out in the heat all day. Your dog doesn't. So give them a half a meal. Make sure you give them as much water as he wants, however, in small segments. When I see people do this all the time, the dog gets hot, they go give the dog an 8-ounce bowl of water or 10-ounce or 12-ounce or 16-ounce. Don't give your dog huge amounts of water at a time. Again, check with your vet. Your vet's going to tell you the same thing because the water in their stomach is also, it fills the stomach. The stomach is still full and it's feeling, especially if there's already food in it, you're diluting the stomach acid, and now the body's got to work even a little bit harder. So definitely try the best you can to, if you know you're going to be going out, and this goes even, you know, without a service dog, just you're going to take your dog to the dog park and run him around, do not feed him a full meal in the morning. You might feed him just the regular meal at night, and then you can always make it up with, you know, cookies or whatever. One half of a meal isn't going to make your dog thin. If your dog has any kind of medical condition, hypoglycemia or anything, talk to your doctor, talk to your vet. But make sure you think about that. People do not think before they do stuff. They go, oh, I gave my dog, you know, the full meal. I gave him, you know, chicken broth and gave him some toast and, you know, gave him pizza crust. And now we're outside in 100 and something degrees and he looks like he's going to die. That is something that can cause or bring on different kinds of seizures, different kind of health issues. Make sure you're very careful, especially if your dog is a senior or a brachiocephalic breed. Most people who have pugs or Frenchies or, you know, bulldogs, things like that, they don't, a lot of the new owners, you guys have no idea that you have to be careful. Nobody tells you, oh my gosh, you got to be careful in the warm weather. You've got to even be careful in the not warm weather. When they start panting, because remember, when dogs are panting, and they're inhaling and exhaling, they're breathing through their mouth. But when the tongue, it, you know, obviously is got some good surface area, but a brachiocephalic dog doesn't have the length of the muzzle. In other words, the nose, it's not the nose, it's the muzzle. The nose is the little black thing on the end. But the muzzle is the part from the basically the eyes, but from back by the eyes all the way out to the front to the nose. So there's a lot of surface area there. A dog like my guy's Rhodesian Ridgeback, there's a lot of surface area. So when it's inhaling and exhaling, even not panting, it has a long way to go. This is why horses don't have a hard time in the cold. They have a hard time in the heat because in the cold, when they inhale cold air, the cold air, by the time it gets into the lungs, it's heated up through this ginormous head and nose and the nasal passages all the way into the throat, all the way down the trachea, all the way down the esophagus, all the way into the stomach or into the lungs. So everything gets warmed up by the time it gets in. But it's hard for animals to pant because most animals don't sweat. Dogs don't sweat, right? They don't have sweat glands. If you have one of those hairy dogs and you don't want to shave it down, which is fine, or even if you have, you know, you're not showing your dog, if you have a dog that has a really thick coat, like a husky or something, you can ask a groomer, or even if your dog is good enough, do it yourself. Go get yourself a Wahl, W-A-H-L, clipper, and get a 40 blade if you can. You might want to get a 20 as well. But you want to get a clipper blade and a clipper. It's called a body clipper. It's maybe $100. And this day and age with grooming costing so much, get yourself a good clipper. You can actually take the belly of the dog, not the part that shows, but just like a swath, let's say on a husky, a 4-inch swath from between the front legs, like where it's by the elbows, back down to, if it's a female, just go straight back. Make sure you don't cut anything. If it's a male, go straight back to the obvious. And then the dog can lay down. You can also put a wet towel down. The dog can lay on the wet towel and it can, not perspire, but it can basically perspire, because perspiration is evaporation, right? That's what it does. Perspiration, when we say our dogs don't produce sweat, that same purpose, though, if we wet that area, it's as if the dog were perspiring. So if you have a dog with, you know, you have one of these poodle mixes with all the hair, the God knows, you know, how much hair, unless you're cutting it really short, and I mean, you know, a quarter of an inch, a half an inch, if there's an inch of fur still, it's insulated. It's like wearing a ski parka. Consider zipping the belly. You can ask your groomer, or just do it yourself if you feel comfortable. Again, you speak with your vet, but your vet's going to tell you the same thing. Well, actually, your vet's going to say, wow, that's a great idea. So it's not going to change what your dog looks like. Nobody's going to see it, but you are going to see it. But you're going to know that your dog is able to cool down, especially if you put a wet towel. You change that every day. Put a wet towel down. Even if you take like a chamois, like those little fake chamois that they have, C-H-A-M-O-I-S, it looks like chamois, but it's called pronounced chamois. If you have a chamois for your car, just take some cold water and put it on that, soak it up, and then just rub it on your dog. It's going to cool him down so much. The armpits also, and between and under the legs, so the inside of the legs, the upper part of the legs and thighs, that area doesn't have as much hair. Wet that down. If your dog ever looks like he's got heat stroke and he's really panting a lot and he's not looking well and his breathing isn't right, that's something you can do. You can just take the other area. You can do on the down ear dogs particularly is take the water and put it on the outside, very little on the inside, just wipe it down. Like, don't, you know, put tons of water into the dog's ear. That's not good for them. But the outside of the ear, you can wet it. The throat going down to the chest is a great place. The armpits in the front, and then kind of like the crotch area into the top of the leg, which would be like the inner thigh on the dog. And if you were smart enough to kind of, you know, zip a path and buzz a little path for that dog on its belly, you can also put the cold on that area. But I actually had a dog who was out at a handler years and years ago, and the dog died from heat stroke with a couple of other dogs. And they had a temperature control on it and a generator and the whole thing. And it was, you know, it was 75 degrees out, but because there were so many dogs, you know, there were, you know, 15 or so dogs, the heat from the dogs raised it up. So even if it's not sunny out, please, please, please be careful. Don't assume that, oh, the sun's not out, so I don't have to worry about anything. Just because the sun isn't out, it doesn't mean that that's not going to be, potentially an issue for you. Now, talking about heat and talking about all these things, how much water is too much? For a little dog, give them a couple of ounces at a time. You can always give them more, but try not to to give them volumes of water. Remember the Black Beauty story, anybody? I was a horse kid, so I love that movie and hate it at all together. Black Beauty was the black, gorgeous horse who he ran to save his owners, and he actually brought back in the carriage, he brought back the doctor, and this was after being ridden and used. And he was just so exhausted. And then his groom, who really was a good person but just didn't know better, gave him buckets of cold water. And he colicked and almost died. Very famous story. So the same thing. Just remember the Black Beauty story. Don't go and give so much water. And don't ever put food into a dog who's panting. You give him a cookie, that's fine. Don't go feeding your dog. When you come back and you go, but he eats at 5 o'clock. If your dog is panting and in distress in any way, shape, or form, even if it's, I don't care if it's 50 degrees out and your dog is panting, you should not be feeding him. If you feed a dog who's panting, or if a dog is under stress, especially service dogs get very, very stressed out. Temperature can be a stressor. Flying can be a stressor. A bunch of screaming toddlers can be a stressor for anybody, including the parents. There are so many different stressors. Make sure that the dog is not going to be, stressed and then eating. If you do that, you want to make sure that, you know, the dog is, going to be calm and not going to be panting or stressed or anxious, because it can create problems. So, you know, again, unless your dog is hypoglycemic, you're better off just giving a small meal, maybe giving a small meal a little bit later, you know, an hour or two later. Hopefully, you know, you'll be able to, make your dog healthy and happy, and prevent some of the vet bills that are obviously things we don't want to have to deal with if we can at all help it. Now, something that's unique to service dogs also. Service dogs, not all of them do, even the legitimate ones. Not all of them wear a harness, but most do. Now, if you are one of those people who buys every gadget and like, oh, look at this fancy one, don't buy a crazy vest online with a lot of heavy padding, and then use it in the summer. You're better off if you have a dog who's a mobility dog, then, you know, you've got to have the mobility harness, like the one that we buy. That's, and it's got sheepskin and all, and it's hot. Basically you have to hopefully do the right thing here. Get your dog, if it's not mobility or it's not a visual one, like a visual impairment dog, guide dog type thing. You want to make sure that you get your dog either a mesh harness, or you put something on the dog in case you're going to be out a lot. If you're going to like the 4th of July fireworks, anybody who's going to be doing 4th of July fireworks, which is the next thing we're going to talk about, you want to make sure that the dog isn't going to be overheated. Don't get stuck on a beach with your dog out in the open. Don't get stuck in a hot area where the dog cannot cool itself down. Here's something else that's really important. In this heat, whether it's a service dog or it's just your regular old pet, the macadam, not so much concrete, but macadam, which is the black top, the black pavement, especially the real shiny, like when they put that driveway sealer on it and it's real shiny, that can get enormously hot and give your dog second and third degree burns on the pads of his feet. And please do not make your dog sit down or lie down on hot pavement. I can't tell you how many people I've seen do this. And the one lady was in Texas. It was over 100 degrees. There was blacktop. her dog, I was ready to jump right out, and she was in the crowd listening to my demonstration, my presentation. And I just looked at her. I said, ma'am, your dog probably should go over there out of the sun. Well, I want to be here, and he's going to sit. And the poor dog, I mean, I can't even imagine how painful it must have been for this poor German Shepherd who's already broiling hot. And then this idiot wants her dog to lie down, not just even sit, lie down on the hot pavement. And the dog wound up getting burns. She wound up leaving because I really called her out on it. So make sure you think about that. If you couldn't go barefoot on that pavement, on that surface, your dog can't go. Now, are your dog's feet a little bit stronger than ours? Yeah, they are. Not when they're puppies, but they get calloused and all. But you still need to make sure you take care of all of the dogs. Make sure you do all the stuff that you need to do. And, you know, don't do this whole thing where you say like, oh, you know, I'm going to go to this parade. I'm going to bring my dog. If you don't have a service dog, or even if you have a service dog and you don't really need the dog for that purpose, don't put your dog in situations where its health is going to be jeopardized or where somebody's going to come over and throw a firework or whatever at your dog. It's just not fair. So, you know, you should be looking at it as basically just, you know, be kind to your dog and try to make a little bit, you know, easier and kinder to your dog. Just don't do things just because you want to do them. Be kind, be thoughtful, and be proactive. One of the nice things that you can do, again, carry some water, not just for you, but for the dog. There are these really cute little water bowls that it's like a little tray that's attached to a water bottle, and they have usually a little carabiner. You know, and you'll see, then hopefully you'll be able to, get your dog out, get your dog safe, get your dog hydrated, and you're not going to wind up having that problem. You're not going to get your dog being sick. But be kind to your dog. Remember also, puppies cannot be out as long as adult dogs, and elderly dogs cannot be out as long as, younger dogs. Puppies, especially when they're going through this, especially if you've imported your puppy, or you've bought a puppy from somebody who bred it in, you know, a cold area. Now you're in, let's say, Southern California, or you're in Texas in a hot area, or Florida. They're going to be able to be probably a little less tolerant of the heat, much like if, you know, somebody comes from, let's say, you know, Vermont, or you're up in Canada or something, and move down to Florida. You know, that first couple of years, it takes time for you to adjust to the extremes in temperature, and it does take that for your dogs as well. So, you know, basically, in conclusion, what we want to do is have good insurance for our dogs, have good proactive health care. Don't wait for something to be huge. I look at people and I say, what do you do, as far as taking the dog, you want to take the dog to a ball game. That's fine. If you're okay, your dog is probably okay. But just remember to keep giving your dog plenty of liquids. Make sure he's not on hot pavement if you're wearing sneakers. That those things are going to be things that change, like your dog is going to be, unable to tell you, hey, my feet hurt, unless it's crying or something else. So just please be mindful, be aware, maybe consider leaving the dog in, I'm not saying leave the dog home, but keep the dog in a very safe environment. Make sure you have things with you for the dog. It's always a great idea to have a little bit of extra water. It's a good idea to have a little snack. You could even bring a couple of dog cookies see if the dog wants to, you know, have like a cookie or something if it's, you know, feeling okay. This way the blood sugar shouldn't go, you know, down. And if you have a little dog, you know, basically like a little Yorkie or a little one of these, you know, mixes, the little tiny ones that are, you know, 4 to 10 pounds. Again, you know, those dogs are not able to regulate and they will get overheated much more quickly because they don't really have that ability to, you know, to sweat and to perspire. So you can wet them down a little bit, like I said, under the armpits, things like that. All right. So, I mean, we're in pretty good shape. I think for today, we've covered pretty much everything I was hoping to. I do want to take a very, very quick question. I haven't answered a question in a while, so I do want to do that today. Let me just look here and find the email. Okay, here it is. All right. So this is from a lady in, I don't know where Jordan is. I don't think it's the country. I think it's probably a name of a town somewhere. It's okay. She's in, her name is Jordan. She is in Mississippi. Okay. She recently got, somebody got her a little dog. She believes it's supposed to be a Maltese poodle mix. She wants to know, the puppy is 4.5 months old. Does she need to get vaccinations for it that are different? And again, vaccinations and things like that, you want to go check with your dog, whoever your vet is, with your dog's vet. If you don't have a vet, you need to get one. I would suggest that you check with your neighbors, because every region needs different types of vaccinations. And I'm in New Jersey. I don't know what they need down in that area, but I can guarantee you, you're going to need to have certain things and make sure your dog is going to stay very hydrated, and keep them also away from areas where they might have, you know, standing water and things like that, where they can get Giardia and leptospirosis and all kinds of other nasty things. I will, unfortunately, I have to go because time just flies. It's amazing. But thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being here and supporting your local shelters by rescuing. Have a wonderful, safe, happy, healthy 4th. Leave your dog at home with some music playing and a bone and some cookies and things if you're going to fireworks. And have a wonderful, healthy, happy, safe 4th of July. The best country in the world. God bless all.